It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Sunday, February 6th, 2022. I'm John Saucier.
I'm Jared Halpert. The national debt breaks a new barrier with Congress staring down another spending bill deadline.
I mean, just the explosive growth here has been phenomenal in the past 20 years.
Olympic fanfare and attention the United States usually gives to the Olympic Games may be a bit more subdued due to quarrels with this year's host country, China.
It's impossible to want to invest in something that we all know constitutes just the biggest human rights double standard.
This is the Fox News Rundown from Washington.
We are less than a month away from our first big election night. Texas and its millions of voters will start narrowing the 2022 field on March 1st. Early voting in that 2022 primary gets underway next week. Some of the statewide offices have crowded fields. Incumbents are facing intra-party challenges, not to mention newly drawn legislative maps in the largest state in the lower 48. So can the early primary and those challenges from the progressive left and the conservative right tell us anything about the direction of the November elections? That's where I started with Darren Shaw, a professor at the University of Texas in Austin, a pollster and a member of the Fox News Decision Desk.
You know, it's a red state. It remains a red state despite, the declining portion of the population that's white, the rising portion that's non-white, especially Hispanic. But the partisan implications of that, as we've seen in 2020 and 2021, are not as maybe clear as people thought they were a few years ago, right? With this rising Hispanic population supposedly going to fuel Democratic resurgence and turn Texas blue and all these sort of interesting observations. But it's in that sense, it's a state that still leans red. It's a state where the Republicans are in power. And so the broader dynamic in 2022, a lot of it is focused on Democrats defending turf and Republicans attempting to hold on to some of these seats, for instance, in the Senate that they won in 2016 on blue turf, or defending or going on the offense in some blue territories, right? That's kind of the main dynamic. And this isn't either of that. However, a couple of small themes that I think are really interesting. We hinted at Hispanic or Latino turnout and vote choice. I'm very interested to see where some of the patterns amongst pockets of Hispanic voters, especially in South Texas, continued to drift towards the Republicans. And I don't want to overstate this. We're not talking about going from 60% Democrat, 60 to 70% Democratic to 60 or 70% Republican. But if you're talking about relatively higher levels of Latino participation in the Republican primary, for instance, that's something that could be very interesting. Maybe less affirmative, lower levels of participation in the Democratic primary amongst Latinos, right? Hispanics don't have to go to vote in the Republican primary to be a problem for Democrats if they simply don't show up and vote in the Democratic primary. That's an issue.
How much of this is the party's trying to sort of define themselves? You have, for instance, Henry Cuellar, who is a very moderate Democrat down in South Texas, facing a more liberal. Now, I know he has some other issues that have arisen in recent weeks. But prior to those, this was a race about sort of the direction that Democrats define themselves with. And somebody like Cuellar, who is a very moderate, some would say conservative Democrat, taking on a more liberal challenger. You have certainly the governor of Texas, who a lot of people would say has been pretty in lockstep with where the Republican Party is, facing a challenge from the right. You have that, I know, at the attorney general's race as well, right?
Yes. So let's kind of explore again some of these themes. On the Republican side, you do have several instances in which well-known entrenched Republicans are being challenged from the sort of Trumpian strain or Trumpian pull of the party. And then you've got some more Trumpy or Trumpian candidates who are being challenged by more moderate candidates. So, for instance, in the gubernatorial primary, you got Greg Abbott, the longtime governor running for a third term, is seen as, you know, by kind of today's standards, somewhat centrist. You know, he's certainly conservative, but maybe not as conservative, certainly not as Trumpian as some of the others.
He's been an ally of President Trump. No, I mean, they show up together a lot.
It's an interesting dynamic. I mean, when Abbott, who was, you know, well-known, he was attorney general, you know, kind of flashed credentials to a wide array of forces within the Republican Party on his rise up, has taken more of a reliably sort of conservative position, especially on issues like immigration. I think the alliance between Trump and Abbott is largely focused on border security issues. And then, you know, I'm not so sure if you pressed Abbott on certain trade issues, you know, for instance, NAFTA and others, he'd be as Trumpian. But to the extent that Trump's policy in Texas is seen as largely sort of consisting of immigration positions, in that sense, Abbott has kind of been part of the Trumpian aspect of the poll of the Republican Party. In that sense, he's attracted opposition. Don Huffines, who's you know, a very well-financed candidate. If you've been in Texas and you've been watching any football, Don Huffines has been on every advertising on every Cowboy. And then when the Cowboys were eliminated, every other team's broadcast for the past couple of months, is mounting, at least in financial terms, a pretty significant challenge, although he hasn't been getting much traction in the polls. But Abbott then is, yeah, he is less obviously, though, so associated with Trump compared to some of the down ballot races where you've got a lieutenant governor's race with Dan mm-hmm. Patrick, who is clearly on sort of the Trumpian end of the party. And then an attorney general's race where Ken Paxton has been identified as kind of a Trumpy type candidate. But he's also had all sorts of personal and legal issues. And so the kind of the most interesting race for people who are really following Texas is that attorney general's race, which has a number of interesting candidates, including George P. Bush, mm-hmm. You know, scion of the Bush family, and some others. There are some interesting Hispanic candidates in Republican primaries. It'll be kind of interesting to see if they draw. You know, you look geographically and kind of see where their support comes from. That could be kind of interesting to do. And then obviously on the Democratic side, there's a lot of candidates. There hasn't been a lot of buzz surrounding it, with the exception of Beto O'Rourke, who's, you know, shifted from the Senate in 2018 to the presidency in 2020. Now he's running for governor in 2022.
Seems to have that Democratic nomination pretty solid, right?
I think he scared off a lot of potential Democratic.
Well, he's got
challenges.
So much. I mean, he can raise so much money.
That's right. You know, a chunk of it comes from Texas, but a big chunk of it comes from outside Texas.
So does that tell you anything about sort of, because the Democrats you mentioned are playing sort of defense in a lot of places, but they have some situations because of redistricting where they have to go against each other. There's some incumbent issues.
Yes.
Is that going to tell us about sort of where Texas Democrats are? Are they more and more centrist party? Are they a more progressive party?
It's a great question. Your observation is right, which is, and this is probably true in places more than Texas, outside Texas. And it's kind of been the case historically in the United States. Is one of the things that you see historically is that these redistricting agreements are oftentimes simply incumbent protection acts. You know, in other words, there are Democrats want a map that favors them, Republicans want a map that favors them, and then ultimately they decide, well, let's just protect each other. That actually is sort of an approach that is held until.
Funny how that happens when it's legislators making the maps,
isn't it? One of the least surprising things in American politics. But I guess actually, in some ways, the lack of that dynamic in 2010 was interesting, right? That they couldn't even agree to protect themselves, right? They insisted on going to the mat for these partisan fights. But the Texas map in 2022 clearly reflects. Let's just get along. We'll protect you. You protect us. But as you mentioned, there are a couple of races just because of the population dynamics mm-hmm. in the state where they've thrown incumbents in against each other or created, you know, open seat contests that are going to be interesting. And I think watched by a lot of people outside of Texas as, you know, maybe portending something for the fall.
What are you getting a sense of sort of who's in? I mean, primaries are tough because it's usually party faithful that turn out. But in Texas, if I recall, the rules are a little bit different, right? Anybody can vote. And so long as you don't vote in both primaries, you don't have to be a registered Republican to vote in the Republican primary, or a registered Democrat to vote in the Democratic primary.
Right. And so just for, you know, our listeners here, there are, generally speaking, three kinds of primaries. There's sort of closed primaries where only registered partisans are allowed to vote. There are semi-open primaries where anybody who's a registered partisan or someone who has what we call a DTS, declined to state, is eligible to vote not in everybody's, but to pick one. That's called a semi-open or a semi-closed, depending upon, you know, which version you're, you know, which scholar you're reading. And then there's open systems. Open systems are, Texas has this. A lot of Southern states have it. There is no party registration. When you register to vote, you just register. You don't register as a Republican or Democrat. That means you can vote in anybody's primary. You can't vote in two. You have to pick one. But there's a lot of what we call crossover voting. Crossover voting is the sincere form, right? If you're a Democrat and you decide, well, I just think it's more interesting on the Republican side, or there's a preferred candidate. Same with the, you know, Republicans crossing over. The more pernicious version of crossover is raiding, where you, a Republican would go into the Democratic primary seeking to support the weakest candidate, right? And this is part, I remember Rush Limbaugh's Operation Chaos back
I remember in that, yes.
2008, right? There's not a lot of evidence, by the way, that there's much rating. Yeah. And to the extent there's crossover, it tends to cancel out, you know, that there isn't kind of a clear direction. So in Texas, you know, if all the action is on one side, then you can get partisans from the other side saying, like, look, my nothing going on in my party. You know, I'm going to go over. For instance, in 2020, the Republican presidential primary in Texas was, you know, a yawn fest. Right.
Right.
So Republicans had a strategic incentive, or maybe just a sincere interest incentive, to go vote in the Democratic primary, which was on Super Tuesday, and where Biden and Sanders were still going at each other. And you could see this here, but it's not clear to me one side is all that much more attractive than the other. So my guess is that you'll, you know, despite the fact everything is polarized, despite the fact we've had record turnout across the last couple of election cycles, it is early. The contests don't look to be as competitive. I mean, Abbott has a little bit of a challenge. Beto's got some, you know, scattered opposition. There are these down ballot races. It doesn't seem to me to be the kind of high salience, high intensity election that's going to drive a huge turnout.
So I guess I'll finish with this. Is there going to be anything that you look at that we can sort of look at data at the end of this primary next month and say, oh, maybe Texas is, you know, turning more red, turning more purple, turning lighter shades of blue? I don't know how you would describe it.
I think people look at the overall turnout figures, Republican and Democratic side, to get a sense of which side is more fired up. And even though Texas, you know, you start with a Republican advantage in Texas just in terms of, you know, identification, you know, that's kind of baked in. And to the extent that one or the other side goes above and beyond what you'd expect, given that, that's interesting. The other thing is interesting is a little more technical, and that is the extent to which these Trump challenges from the right and these progressive challenges from the left end up succeeding. I mean, I know there's some moderates challenging, you know, more extreme candidates, but I think most of the action here is, you know, does the AOC, Bernie Sanders squad side on the Democrats, do they actually do well in these? And on the other hand, how well do Trump candidates do in Texas? People are just desperate for tea leaves at this point nationally. And so they'll look at Texas and I think maybe overlearn some lessons, but those lessons will be there, I'm sure.
Well, I appreciate the caution, because I'm going to be guilty of looking into those tea leaves as well, as somebody who's doing one of these segments before the primary in March. So.
Yeah, well, you got to have data. Data's better than
it's better than not having data, right?
Yep, exactly.
So we will continue to look for you, Darren, for all of that data as the results come in, and you can help us understand and get a sense of where we're going to in the midterms. I appreciate the time, and stay warm down there in Texas.
My pleasure.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
Well, there's the murky origins of the coronavirus, alleged human rights abuses, or questionable trade practices. The United States has multiple reasons to be wary of China. Nevertheless, America sent athletes to Beijing to compete in the Winter Olympic Games, which conducted opening ceremonies on Friday, while the federal government decided on a diplomatic boycott, when the American media presence there basically non-existent. Even House Speaker Nancy Pelosi warned American athletes during her press conference on Friday.
I wish the athletes well. I do not encourage them to speak out against the Chinese government there, because I fear for their safety if they do. I'll remove all doubt about why I said they shouldn't speak out, because I fear for their safety. So I hope they're safe athletically, politically in every other way.
We're speaking today with the host of Fox Across America, Jimmy Failla, who is heard weekdays on radio stations across this great country of ours. Jimmy, scale 1 to 10, how excited are you for these Winter Olympic Games coming up in Beijing? Don't go into the negatives now.
No. Listen, I have never been more excited to not watch an Olympic Games.
Not even going to check out the figure skating, the bobsledding.
You know, what's so crazy about it is if you remember as a kid, you know, when the Olympics were delayed and it was like, oh, Nancy Kerrigan, you know, that whole thing. And they were going to skate that night. But you're like, don't give me any spoilers. I don't want to know. You know, I've never cared less. And it bothers me as a guy who grew up specifically loving the Winter Olympics. You know what I'm saying?
There's so many cool sports you wouldn't normally check out. Like, when else are you going to watch bobsledding? When else are you going to watch figure skating?
No, and you got to realize I'm a guy who goes on Gutfeld dressed like an Olympic figure skater. So I have some spiritual relation to the Winter Olympics, but it's just not there. And of course, it's, you know, because of the China thing.
Yeah.
You know, I would like it more if they made the sports more specific to what's going on in China. You know what I mean?
For sure.
So if they had like the 200-meter unpaid sneaker-making contest, I'd tune in to watch that.
Yeah, you know they'd be pretty solid.
The men's forced re-education camp. I mean, it's grim, but that's what's going on.
So that was my next question was the whole, is it because it's in China the reason why we're just not interested in this? I mean, even the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, said this week, American athletes, don't say anything about China when you're over there. You've got human rights abuses allegedly going on in China. So is the American public just fed up with China to the point where we don't even watch our own athletes participate in their games?
I do think so, because when we were talking off air, first and foremost, none of us can really name an Olympian right now,
right?
Which is not the world we grew up in. You know, we know like Mary Lou Retton, her Olympics were like 40 years ago, but you still know her name because Olympians carried that kind of clout. I mean, even think of somebody like the only Olympian's name we've really forgotten who was iconic was Bruce Jenner. And it's not because we turned our back on Bruce. It's because Bruce turned his back on Bruce, so to speak. But shout out to Caitlyn Jenner. She's a great Fox Across America guest. But
love Caitlyn.
But the point is, yeah, she's actually really funny. But the point is, you know, these Olympians are really getting overshadowed by the country they happen to be competing in. And it's impossible to want to invest in something that we all know constitutes just the biggest human rights double standard, especially at a time when our country has been torn apart over people crusading for social justice, yet turning a blind eye towards real oppression. You know, and it's also fascinating is on our radio show, we were covering the Georgia voting bill and how the Democrats have been yelling about voter suppression for the better part of 6 months. They don't vote in China. They were president for life. You're so concerned about voter suppression. Let's send a couple billion bucks to a country that doesn't allow voting. It's silly.
Very true. So the American government, they're not going to be there. This diplomatic boycott going on. Mm-hmm. Put yourself in the shoes of a current Winter Olympian. American, you're going over to, how would you feel? Would you feel, I guess, in danger during this whole thing?
Well,
how should these athletes feel?
If they didn't, they do now. Because when Pelosi was like, don't open your mouth. We don't know what they're going to do. Think about that. I'm a parent. I can't imagine sending my kid to a play date and being like, don't talk to the dad. He might snap and kill everybody.
Right,
who drops the minivan off at that house?
Don't bring your phone. They're worried about possible Chinese hacking on phone, too. So a lot of these athletes have had to get their burner phones on before they go over to China.
This is the most disturbing Olympics ever. And, you know, everybody's talking about COVID. But if you've ever hung out in an Olympic village, that's not a top 10 virus to catch.
No, definitely not. And I think these athletes, they don't want the burner phone over there because they're going to have to re-download all these dating apps when they get into the Olympic village. So that's going to be an event in its own. So we're speaking with Jimmy Failla, the host of Fox Across America here, talking about the upcoming Winter Olympic Games opening up officially in Beijing, China on Thursday, our time, Friday, their time. And it's seems like an underwhelming Olympics. The American media is not really paying attention to this. Here at Fox, I don't think we have any reporters going over there. I know NBC is going remote for a lot of it.
Such a good metaphor is on Friday, I was driving to work at Fox, and NBC, because, you know, obviously carrying the Olympics, there's a, you know, big to-do, big presentation. They actually just had like an outdoor step and repeat where their anchors would normally sit, but it was pouring, so they couldn't even do their setup. And it was just such a metaphor for the whole, the network carrying it isn't carrying it.
Right.
I've never seen something like this.
It's raining already on these Olympic Games.
Yeah.
Here in the U.S., it's kind of looking like that over there, too.
And you know who I feel for, too, on some level, is the athletes used to use the Olympics as a springboard to all kinds of, like, commercial relevance. I can't imagine anyone's coming back from Beijing, you know, with three commercials. You know, this is one of those Olympics where you're just happy to come back. You're like, oh, we made it. You don't even care if you got your luggage. You're just happy to be here.
Forget about the money. You just want to come back with your life intact, right?
It's bizarre. And it's like, you know what part of the reason I think really does hurt the Olympics, though, too, is we don't play team ball as a country anymore. There's very little, you know, we're all in this together, you know, when it comes to America. You know, and the sad reality is, no matter how you vote politically, we are playing for the same American team. But that seems to have escaped this generation in the age of social media. So you don't actually have a moment, you know, where it's like, ah, you mess with America, you mess with all of us. Now it's like, you mess with America, that's their fault. You know, that's the Democrat. Well, that's the Republicans' fault. We got to play better team ball.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like this particular Olympics is going to be the thing that galvanizes the country around a particular athlete. Because like we said, not much star power going on there. Media coverage is going to be limited. And you have the backdrop of all these human rights abuses happening in China.
If you listen closely, you can hear advertisers jumping off bridges right now. Because they bought all these ads up front. And like, what did we just come in here? So many ad execs are getting axed right now because of this.
Any particular event that sparks your interest?
I always love the luge because, like, the luge is the one Olympic sport. You could put a guy in it against his will, and he would still do pretty well because you're just in the sleigh. Just get in the sleigh and shut up. And I'm always partial towards the bobsled because of Cool Runnings, the Jamaican bobsled team.
Of course.
And I went, it's really funny, but the Six Flags in New Jersey back in the day had a bobsled ride. And you could go on the bobsled.
Sounds dangerous.
It actually was. But you didn't go on, like, without a track. You know, like when they let little kids drive at Disney World, you're steering the wheel, but the car's not going anywhere.
Okay.
It was the same thing. I mean, it's New Jersey. You know, they tried giving people control in Jersey once. They had a place called Action Park that became known as Class Action Park because everyone got themselves killed. And they're like, this is why we can't have nice things. Now you're riding a bobsled on a track.
I think the figure skating is usually fun to watch.
Listen, as a kid, we loved figure skating. And we love downhill skiing because it's really intense. And I remember when I was a kid, it was funny because Alberto Tomba was a very promiscuous male Italian skier. And it was funny because, like, back then they talked about it. Like, Alberto Tomba nowadays would have been like a Me Too violation.
Yeah.
But they're like, oh, there's Tomba with another blonde.
The Winter Olympic Games coming up in Beijing, China. Not much American media coverage. No American diplomats are going to be there. But you know who is there right now? And during the opening ceremonies, Vladimir Putin, the leader of Russia. And there's a little something going on with Russia right now. There's 100,000 Russian troops who are hanging out at the border with the Ukraine. Putin says, no, we're not going to invade. We just have these F-16 fighter jets, these tanks, these long-range military weapons. But Putin is playing diplomat with China at their Winter Olympics. Let's talk about that just for a second.
Well, it's kind of scary to think that's going on because you see them, you know, clearly huddling at a time when he is stockpiling troops and denying it, which is laughable. I mean, if your parents come home, you have 200 solo cups in a keg and you say you're not throwing a keg party, your parents know better.
We've all tried that one before, though.
I had the kind of dad that just pumped the keg and jumped in it, so I was okay. You just had to deal him in on the beer. But no, it's obvious the optics of this are terrible in terms of the invasion, but as it pertains to Putin and China, it's scary. Because I say scary from a sense that you never feel in our country in this era like we're fighting the right battle. And what I mean by that is at a time when they're loading up on weapons, we're firing soldiers because they're not vaccinated. And I really, it's crazy. You could feel whatever way you want to feel about the vaccine. The God's honest truth is soldiers face worse adversities in war than COVID. And there's no argument to be made, you know, that if you can get shot at or, you know, face off as a landmine or anything in between, you know, a virus we're going to beat 99% of the time. And I'm not diminishing the virus or anybody who got sick from it. I'm just saying it seems to me we'd be fighting the wrong battle.
Yeah, absolutely.
With all due respect to the military's use of the pregnant man emoji, I don't know that China and Russia will be cowed by the existence of such things.
If anyone can figure it out, though, maybe the Chinese can. Because you mentioned the coronavirus. Mm. We all know where that started.
Mm.
China, obviously. Mm. Now, in the 2020, what turned into the 2021 Summer Olympic Games in Tokyo, that city was an absolute mess during the virus. I mean, they were in a state of emergency. There was last second pressure that they might call the whole thing off. Mm-hmm. You haven't heard anything about the coronavirus in Beijing, which kind of scares me a little bit. Yeah. For these athletes and for these games too.
Yeah, that's fascinating, you know, but I think the tell there is they seem to really know how to handle this virus. It's almost
they
like
they did start.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's almost like they have the user's manual in a laboratory somewhere in the Wuhan province. Isn't it weird, though, how they can do that? And everyone just plays along. And I think, honestly, that's the farce of the whole thing. So we sent our athletes. We kept the media home. We kept the diplomats home. But you and I both know the stars of the Olympics are the athletes. So we legitimized this by giving them our athletes. It's a propaganda coup on the world stage. And I really do feel for the athletes because they're being pawned in this instance.
Yeah, I feel for them doubly because not only is it so difficult to get to any Olympics, but then you face the fact that we're in a coronavirus right now with all these lockdowns. So what does that do to your training? What does that do to your timetable? And then all of a sudden, sorry, the media coverage is going to be limited for you athletes.
Yeah.
The American diplomats not going to be there to back you up. And by the way, the American public, we don't even care about this Olympics anyways. Should be an interesting Winter Olympics. That'll do it for today's episode of the Fox News Rundown from Washington. Next week, we'll continue to follow the continuing developments on the coronavirus and check in with Congress back in town, along with the latest on the Russia-Ukraine conflict and more. Until then, from our team here at Fox News Radio, thanks for listening. I'm John Saucier.
This is Jimmy Fallon, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.